am Ann Legorian, my guest, Hall of Fame defensive lineman, Deacon Jones. And you're styling. You are styling. Look at this shirt.
Well, I've got some good friends, you know.
Showing a little chest, too.
My wife makes this stuff. You know, she's good at it. Yeah, she designs
it. It's gorgeous.
I couldn't dress myself. I don't have that much class.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm a lineman.
Well, okay. So you can discard the class because you guys were tough. The fearsome foursome, right?
Yes, just four probably the best football players that ever played the game of football.
Just four.
Well, that's all we needed. You know, we thought that we'd spot the enemy. The seven, and let him have seven extra guys.
You had Merlin Olsen,
yes,
who's now selling flowers.
Yeah, well,
and doing a little bit of broadcasting.
I won't be held accountable for that, that part, but yes, Merlin Olsen was the tackle, and Rosie Greer and
Lamar Lundy. Rosie right. Greer, he's a preacher now.
Yeah, well, you know, guy got to make a living. I guess he's trying to atone for all the quarterbacks that he killed.
You know? What about you, Mr. Sack?
Well,
you invented the term sack.
Yeah, that was part of my makeup. I live a very quiet life now. I do Ram broadcasting, and you know, that's up and down, and you know how tough that is to do. And I'm reliving those emotional days that I had to deal with in football.
How did you come up with that term? Sack?
Well, you know, when I came into the league, you got to remember, football was nowhere near what it is today as far as publicity is concerned. The game was just probably in its infancy stages, but it was still an old game. But they had just learned how to merchandise and market the game. And they still, at that time, was marketing the receivers and the quarterbacks, the running backs, the hot shots, you know. But what makes this game tick, as you know and I know, is defense. So when I came in, tackling the quarterback, which I did for a living, had no immediate reference to it. So the fan had no tie-in to it. You know, when you hit a quarterback, man, if you hit him wrong, you might get more flack from it during that time than anything else. So we had to come up with something that identified what we did, and that was tackle a quarterback. Now you've got to get a name that will fit into the headline. I mean, it's just like not going in the drawer and picking out a name.
Right.
It's got to be something that the newspaper man will get excited about, and it'll fit in the headline. And so Deacon invented the term sack. And and for that reason, I always felt like if you took all the offensive linemen and you put them in a bag and you gave me a Louisville Slugger and let me beat on the bag, you know, I mean, that's the way my thinking was.
What an imagination.
Yeah, when I played, and that's where the whole foursome's thinking was. We were always looking for ways to take our game to another level and take what we did for a living to another level, because we didn't get publicity then. You know, we're probably one of the first defensive lines that really got publicity. You know, being in Los Angeles helped. But after we got started, you notice Minnesota Vikings came up with a line with a name,
the
Dallas Cowboys.
The Purple Eaters. Right. And
so everybody
the
started
Steel
to,
Curtains.
Yeah, yeah, and it took the game to another level. And it brought out the things to me that was important to the overall development of the game, which is what makes this game really tick, and defense make this game tick.
But all of a sudden, the term sack was born.
Yes.
Who picked it up? Some newspaper guy?
Being a pretty violent player, I got a lot of media coverage, and sack was catchy, and it gave, I think, I'm so proud of the fact that it gave football an identity, because the word is used on every level of football.
117 sacks.
When?
Between 64 and 69.
Yeah, that's true.
Between Overall, 64. It was 180.
Right.
I see. You know your stats.
That's right.
I said, wait. Make sure you get the full 180 in there.
As you know, the league did not start officially
until 1982.
Until 1982. I have been punching and pushing this thing for a long time because I don't think it's fair for this to happen. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there who gave a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to this game and did a lot to make this game what it is today. And to just open up a statistic as important as rushing a passer. And just forget about the real guys who could rush the passer. I mean, when you look at the numbers, Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor fall fifth and sixth on this list. And I think that need to be brought out because, number one, it inspired the young people that comes into this game to chase the real record, not one that's not the real one. And I'll always be there, whether the NFL makes it official or not. My 180 will always be there. And every kid or every person that gets involved in this game in the future will ask, well, why? Deacon Jones played four quarters, didn't he? Deacon Jones played 14 games a season, didn't he? So why is his stats not included with these? Are they false? I mean, so all you do is open up questions if you don't go back and clear the problem up. So that's what my whole thing is right now, is to get the NFL to bring it up. Whether I'm in front or not, doesn't matter, but let's respond to it.
Set the record straight, 180, mm-hmm. And don't forget it.
And don't forget it,
we'll
folks.
Be back with Deacon Jones right after this.
I'll break your nose.
We're back with Deacon Jones, who was a member of that great defensive line of the 60s, the fearsome foursome. And he is here right now, as mellow as can be.
Mellow's a cello.
Just like a lamb. All you guys were lambs off the field, weren't you?
Well, I tell you, football is a violent sport. I mean, I'd like to follow up on what you just said, because sure, I would like to have been a lamb in my business. I would have liked to have gone home after a hard day at the office and felt, just tired, not beat up and tired, So I realized early in the game that my business was violent. And the more violence that I perpetrate on the opposition, the less I have to accept. So I worked very hard at making their lives miserable as I possibly could.
How did you turn that off when you were finished and went home?
Well, it's not an easy task, because what the problem is when you work all week to prepare for something, and then you go out there and have it happen all the opposite way, and you can't do nothing about it. And then you have to eat that, you have to live with that until you can get back out there, start the work process all over again, and then go to Sunday and try it out again, So you live a life of ups and downs, peaks and valleys.
And waiting for that next game.
And waiting for the next game.
Prove yourself again.
All over again. Whether you played good this week or whether you didn't play good this week, the process starts all over again.
So could you turn it off when you went
home? So yes, I could. You learn that. Well, you don't start this game in the pros. You start this game all the way back to Pop Warner. And then you go through the different stages of this game, and you learn as you go. If you survive those stages, you learn how to deal with the game versus life versus the people around you. It's tough in the beginning.
Is it tougher now with the current atmosphere because of the money and the greed? And it's just, there's more pressure, it seems.
Well, see, money's a numbers game. My point is that money and this game is two separate entities. Okay, now, as far as players are concerned, the quicker they learn to separate the money from the actual performance on the field. Now, I held out 1 year in my whole career, and that was 1968. And I refused to go to camp under any circumstances until we straighten out this. Because once my uniform goes on my back, I turn into that animal that we talked about. And then I don't think about money no more. All I think about is a quarterback or a halfback.
But it was settled before the season started.
Yes, I have to settle it because I can't go into camp and play half of football.
Right.
You can't get a little bit pregnant.
Sure.
Either you're pregnant or you're not.
Well, the intensity obviously was there.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that if you haven't settled your differences, then you stay home until you settle your differences.
So you agree with that mentality?
Yeah, when the uniform goes on, it ain't about money. It's about my commitment to my teammates, to my fans, and to the game itself. That's a separate issue. So you cannot ever play this game and get paid enough money for it. Everybody gripes about what a football player makes, and he's the last guy on the totem pole. I like to see any person, any human being, put their body through what we put our bodies through for the short amount of time. And we spend more time training and preparing for our game and very little time playing it. So if we made $1 million a minute, we'd be underpaid.
Are you hurting now, physically?
No, I'm the deacon. You understand? The rest of the boys hurt, but I refuse to hurt.
Forgive me for asking that question.
No, I didn't get any.
I should have known better.
No, really and truly, I didn't get any.
I mean, but
you
went through, obviously, all the pounding, all the grinding, all that physicality had to affect you a little bit.
Yeah, but I was lucky.
I understand that you were thrusting the pain on the opponent.
But I was lucky, and I admit that. I mean, I was lucky. You know, I stayed in real good shape, and I my style of play kept me from getting a lot of injuries because, you know, I didn't get no operations. And when you don't get no operations, means you know nothing is removed from your body.
Sure.
When they remove things from your body, you can't grow it back. You understand? And like now, you've got to go on a lifetime training program to always keep that joint solid and sound. You understand what I mean? Well, I was lucky. I didn't get no operations.
I mean, for as physical as you were, as that foursome was, to have no injuries is quite.
Yeah, I had none. I had none, and now all I do is fight my weight, and if I keep that in check, you know, I'm solid as a rock. Now, the wear and tear does bother you, the bumps and the bruises and the hitting and the pounding every down. That is always going to be with you. I mean, my body will never be the same. You know, I hurt on cold days. I hurt when the weather changed. I can tell you better than the weatherman what the weather's going to be like, you know. But that's just from the constant pounding every down, you know. But I know guys who, friends of mine, who had operations, like Jim Otto. He had 9 knee operations. And,
tough.
You know, well, he hurts. He hurt every day of his life.
Oh, yeah.
I do not have a problem with anybody that makes as much money as they possibly can, as much money as the traffic will allow. This game produces a lot of income, okay? Before, during my time, I mean, we did not have the things in place that would dictate that we share in the revenue. I mean, we had to start from scratch forming a player association that protected us on the job, protected us salary-wise, and all the things that go with a union-type representation.
And we'll be back with Deacon Jones right after this. We're back with Deacon Jones, the inventor of the sack. The sack man. What do you think right now when these guys do the sack dance and carry on like they're at a disco? And
well, you know, to a certain degree, I understand exactly why that is, because you know a lot of owners now have understood, have started to understand, you know, that this is an entertainment business. I mean, you know, I wouldn't do it because number one is because the coaches in my day would not allow me to do it. I would get fined not only by my team, but by the league if I did something like that. You know, I got fined for wearing a pair of white shoes, and then Broadway Joe came along, and boom, everybody wore white shoes. You see, but when I stepped out with them in 1964, I got fined. They threatened to kick me out of the Pro Bowl. But see, the point is, things change. I think that any guy who chooses to do this is a form of expressing himself for the good achievement that he's just done. That's what it's about. But I don't find it would fit in my game because it's a waste of energy. They waste a lot of energy. And then you get in some of those pileups when all your teammates come to congratulate you for doing something good, it's some strong blows thrown in there.
The guys today, I know you think, could not compare to the physicality of a fearsome four line like yours or some other defensive lines back in the 60s.
Well, you have to look at this thing two ways. You know, everybody asks guys like me, well, could you play during this era? You know, I go to reverse. I say, could they play during my era? You see, because we were trained, we were more tested tough, I think, because we scrimmaged more against each other. Our training camps were a lot harder. See, so therefore, you're going to produce a lot tougher football player. I mean, we played with more injuries. I mean, we fought off a lot of the hangnail injuries that these guys go to the hospital with. You know, I mean, I wouldn't leave a game because of a concussion. You think I'd leave a game because of a concussion? I got to be completely out of my mind. No, I've never had a concussion. You know, you get in this tight, I'd have been in the hospital years ago if I let you in that tight. But no, I protected myself very well. But we were taught, trained mentally and physically, to withstand pain. And we did not go out for injuries like guys go out with now. But also, you got to understand one thing. They make a lot of money now. You see, a contract now worth $10 million or $20 million. You can't go out there for the love of anybody and risk that type of a contract. See, now we've gotten, you know, through technology and through game development, you know, people now can come in and tell management that you can't play my boy this week. Or my boy this week is not going to go because he's not 100%. Okay, before you didn't have that problem because right. we had no agents.
Plus, you couldn't tell the coaches too much back then.
No,
the coaches
you couldn't tell them nothing. You can and you shouldn't be able to tell a coach nothing now, because you know either you got to have a leader or you're not going to win.
But it's tougher now because the players are making so much more than the coach.
Well, we've always made more money than the coach.
But the disparity.
He's just a coach,
really.
But it is a form of leadership.
Yeah, but he's the leader.
Yeah, it's a form of leadership.
Shouldn't they pay the coaches?
And you have to respect him.
Shouldn't they pay the coaches more?
No. I think they get paid too much now. But see, the point is that understand that football has to have discipline. A coach job is to discipline those 53 men that he has. So you can't change what the coach want to do. Like the Hostetler and Snell fiasco was Hostetler was totally wrong. You don't have to get to nothing else. He was wrong.
Why?
Because he challenged the coach on the field of battle.
Right.
You don't challenge General MacArthur in the field of battle. Or General Eisenhower, you don't challenge them. What they say wrong or right, gotta go.
You know, Hostetler resented those comments a couple of days later. Do you think that made it into a racist thing? Do you think?
No, I know Art very well, and Art wouldn't do a thing like that. But I'm saying, even before you get to those comments, he was wrong for whatever he said to the coach. For talking back. He was totally wrong. Now discipline is broken down when that happens. I mean, the coach put in the game plan. He's in charge of that. Only Al Davis can change that. You understand? The quarterback is the last guy, or any player is the last guy. Gee, when you allow that, then discipline is broke down. Okay? So what my point is that, as far as the racist part of it, I wouldn't believe that in a million years.
You don't think he called him you white quarterback?
Oh, man, if that had been Deacon, then yes, I probably would have said that. You probably could say, yeah, Deacon said that. Because I used to call Merlin white boy all the time, you know.
Did he call you black boy?
Oh, she got Merlin. He changed a lot of things. But he gets away with it because of the fact I know how he means it.
And you guys are good buddies.
Yeah, I know. Buddy had nothing to do with it. I know how he means it.
How did he mean it?
You know, you got to understand one thing. A friend can call you something, you know, and you know that it may be negative to the masses. But when the friend says it, you know it's not coming from here. It's a joke because it fits the situation that you both may be in. But then again, when it becomes a bigoted statement, is when you say it in a bigoted frame of mind. I bet any amount of money Art Shell wouldn't say this in a million years. His personality is not that way. If Deacon Jones would have been the head coach and in that position, then there's a good chance I may have said that.
And you would have gotten in trouble, didn't you?
No, with who? First of all, he wouldn't have come up in my face like that. Because I'd have dropped him right there on the sideline.
It wouldn't have gone that far.
No, it wouldn't have gone that far. We wouldn't have been talking about a racial slur.
Right.
We'd have been talking about a right hand. That's what we would have been talking about. First and foremost, Hostetler was dead wrong. Because he challenged authority. And he challenged it on national television.
O.J. Simpson, you're from Los Angeles. Spent so much time. I'm sure you knew or you know.
Oh, yeah.
O.J. Simpson, what do you think of that whole situation?
I know Juice very well. He and I used the same barbershop. I played against him from 1969 through my retirement in 1974. I've attended a lot of affairs community-wise with Juice. As I said, I played against him at the height of his career. I don't believe one minute that he could participate or administer this kind of pain on anybody. I don't know the answers to the legal questions that's tied to this case. I don't think anyone knows that. We will find out in the ensuing months exactly what went down wrong. But if I had to answer the question right now about O.J. Simpson, whether he's innocent or whether he's guilty, that I would say, just like he says, he's unequivocally innocent of these charges. And it's going to take the proof in a court of law to convince me that he's capable of doing something like this. Until it's all put down on the table, and let's find out if O.J. Simpson is guilty. If he's guilty, then he has to suffer the consequences like any other American or any other person who committed a crime. But as a human being, And the man that I know, I do not believe it until it's proven to me.
Thanks very much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, you ought to invite me more often.
I will.
Yeah, thank you. During the course of your career and after your career, and you know, one trophy is just like another trophy. You remember how you got it, why you got it, and things of that nature. But to rise up to the top, I was a 14th round draft choice. And to go all the way to the Hall of Fame and then take the next step, which was being a member of the 75th anniversary team. Those are things that cannot change ever in life. As long as footballers remember, those things will be remembered. And I will be a part of those things. And I will have given and paid my dues. And coming from that level of football to the top of the ladder gives me the supreme satisfaction.